Basically, they tell me that you went in what, 63? With the Rangers.
Rangers.
Yeah. For the Rangers?
63 and 64.
And when did you go back after that?
65 and 66 as Rifle Company, First Sergeant, C Company, uh-huh. First Sergeant, 65 and 66.
Uh-huh.
Then I went back in 67 and 68 with the 3rd.
The previous interview was with Russ McDonald, conducted by Curtis Peoples. On June 22nd, 2002.
There's been some before, but they're provisional battalions. I went through Ranger School with them. And great soldiers. We participated in Buzzsaw. And I learned a lot from them, which helped me save lives when I went back over.
Right.
And that's the reason I went back. I didn't have to go back to 65, but I was the first sergeant. The first sergeant, you know, you can't say I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I went back, took care of the troops.
So you found the Rangers to be a good fighting force?
Yeah, yeah, they were.
How did that compare to later on when you went back and with other Arvin troops later on?
I wasn't around any Arvin
troops. Oh, you weren't?
Uh-uh. Okay. Very little, anyway. But the Rangers were by far the most elite troops. In fact, we had a linebacker at Texas A&M, Doc Wynn, pronounced N-G, or spelled N-G,
U-Y-N. Plays with the Cowboys right now.
Yeah, plays with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
He's a leading tackler on the team, Texas A&M from his freshman year on.
Uh-huh.
And if I'd had a battalion of not Dot Wins, I'd have won the war in 63.
Yeah.
But they had a battalion of Dot Wins in there, man.
Yeah. What did you do? What was your main responsibility when you first got there with the Rangers?
Advisor.
Just advisor.
Yeah.
And did y'all, I guess, just go out on patrols, or was it training?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, did all that stuff. It wasn't anything, me and a captain. Supposed to be a captain and 2 E-7s. I was E-7 at the time. But we didn't have me and a captain. I went back to Saigon one time, scrounged medical supplies, found a special forces medic there that really fostered his name, that had been levied out of special forces and sent over there, and he didn't have a job. He's an E-7 medic. Had a previous tour in Laos and all that stuff. Damn good medic. I said, you know, the guy with the Ranger? I caught him here drinking his vodka. Yeah, I think, yeah, it sounded good to me. So I took him out there. They kept sending me messages to reassign. Send Willie Foster back here. He's not authorized out there. We're an authorized medic. But he was a medic, and we kept him. They finally assigned him to us.
Mm-hmm.
Great kid. He did, man.
So when you went back in 65, what was your responsibilities then? Back?
Rifle Company First Sergeant.
Rifle Company First Sergeant.
Mm-hmm. Good troop. Mm-hmm. The reason we didn't take any more casualties than we did is not because of the officers, because they didn't know what they were doing either. Really. And but because all my squad leaders and platoon sergeants could walk on water. They knew where the stumps were.
Mm-hmm.
And they took care of troops.
Where were you stationed at when you went back in 65?
Well, it was based in Fond Range. We operated all over.
All over?
Yeah.
What were some of the camp, or I guess base camps, other fire bases that,
yeah,
that you went out to?
Most of them temporary.
Just temporary?
Mm-hmm.
and you said you went back a third time?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that again?
67, 68.
And once again, I guess same duty as before?
Yeah, First Sergeant.
First Sergeant.
And the war was starting to perk up a lot more then. In fact, we took 200, according to our battalion surgeon, which I've met, we took 268 casualties that passed through the aid station in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of casualties in 3 days.
Yes, it
was. We killed thousands of them. 10 to 68 was by far the worst. Actually, anybody's been bitten them, so.
Right. how did you find how the war was progressing in 67, 68, then what were your feelings on it as opposed to maybe 63? Like you said, you could have probably won the war in 63 if you would have had a hold.
They turned us loose, yeah. But, well, they pulled the captain and I back, we went to Benoit, and they had General Taylor and McNamara, Secretary of Defense,
mm-hmm.
over there for briefings. And all these people got up and briefed them and all this crap. And they came to the conclusion that the war was over and the 1st 1st, 2nd, and 4th Corps. They were going to send advisors back to the States. It wasn't over. They said the only people that was still having trouble was the Vietnamese Rangers. And the areas they had us operating in, the Viet Cong outnumbered us 4-1. And so, of course, I had some friends there on the bar in Saigon. And she said, I'm going to sell my bar. All Americans are going home. I said, don't do it, because the war ain't over, you know. And it wasn't. I don't know why the guys got up and gave them all the presentations about how they'd kill everybody in their zones or core areas. But the war was not anywhere near over.
Right.
I saw her again. I went back over there. She sold her bar in Saigon. It was in the import-export business. And she's crying big tears, you know.
Yeah. What did you do after your last tour there in Vietnam?
Well, after I got out of the hospital, they sent me to Waco, Texas. I was advisor to the 71st Airborne Brigade and the Texas National Guard. I was the first airborne advisor there.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I got real disillusioned. After there about 2 months, I went in and made a 1049 request for transfer up after watching one of the drills on the weekend. I said, I no longer desire to serve people I consider substandard soldiers and draft dodgers. And that's what they were. They were draft dodgers. Every company had a 50-man waiting list to get into it.
Right.
Because the shutdown list was all over Texas in the National Guard outfits, except the 71st Airborne Brigade. And I finally got shaped up. It looked pretty good when I left there.
Good.
I was there 2 years. I got promoted to command sergeant, to sergeant major then. And they sent me to Texas A&M. I was sergeant major over at Corps of Cadets.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, I got about 175 cadets through jump school. They're still cadets. They had to pay their own way to go to Benning and all that stuff over a 2 year period.
Right.
And 13 through Ranger school and 16 through jump master school. They gave me a big plaque, old sergeant plaque, you know.
Yeah.
Sergeant Major McDonald, airborne ranger, jump master all the way, engraved on it and everything. Great kids. Then I jumped in with the Texas National Guard, and it's kind of funny. I did a lot of stuff. I was getting my butt chewed out, of course. But going to jump master school, for example, the Army had two C-47s at Fort Sill. And I scrounged one of them to fly them up over Christmas holidays just when I went to jump master school.
Mm-hmm.
I told some colonel there at 4th Army that I was going to do this. He outright, and he didn't think I could pull it off. Then I scrounged the C-47 and flew them up there. And they got there and they finally figured out we had cadets going through jump master school. They said the program hadn't been approved for ROTC cadets. And they passed the paperwork around, I guess, there at 4th Army. Finally, the commandant of jump master school said, jump them. And we jumped. And the first time they had a class that everybody graduated. It's very easy to flunk jump master school.
Uh-huh.
And I had six of my officers run up there and they're going to jump master school here. But then the plane broke down, coming back and landed in Biloxi or someplace. And I had to scrounge the other C-47. I went to jail over some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I was sergeant major is the way I did everything. It's like at Ranger School, every university in the nation had two allocations. Well, I had to give all my people swim tests and Ranger PT tests and all that. I knew they could pass it. And I called the sergeant major up and said, look, when these other schools flunked somebody, swim test or Ranger test, put one of my men in, and I got 7 through that year. 6 the next year. They shaped up a little bit. I still only had 2 allocations. Then I decided to jump in with the Texas National Guard. We were going to jump in 30 minutes before they did. We were going to dress against them for the weekend up Fort Hood. And so I got already learned my lesson, getting chewed out. So I put this paperwork in to do it, you know. And we went home on Friday. I was going to go up and coordinate the training the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And hadn't heard a word back from anybody. I was walking out the door, the phone rang. And he said, General Westmoreland personally approves you jumping in with the National Guard. He shouldn't have done it, because if somebody got hurt, of course, the general couldn't get asked to do the fact. But we jumped in and kicked butt all weekend. I didn't even give him food. I gave him coordinates where to find the food.
Mm-hmm.
And sea rash. But it's a great thing, you know.
Kind of motivate them a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I had 7 Ranger teams. I had 7 qualified Rangers. Each team was led by a qualified Ranger, airborne jump master, and all that stuff. And the other kids hadn't been, but I'd organized Rutter's Rangers. Rutter, General Rutter, was the guy that took Point de Hoc, 2nd Ranger Battalion, in World War II, you know, the kind of mountains and that was doing. And he was the president of Texas A&M, but he'd already died before I got there. He died a month before I got to A&M. And we had formed the Rutter's Rangers, so we had a good time. Good troop.
And what year was that?
70 to 73, I was at A&M. Then I got promoted to Command Sergeant Major and sent me to Alaska, 172nd Arctic Light Infantry. Now, 3 tours in Vietnam, 5 years in Texas, they sent me to Alaska. Good old 172nd Arctic Light Infantry. That didn't even sound cold.
Yeah.
And it was. I was on jump size up there, too.
How long were you up in Alaska?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, we jumped on the Yukon River. And it was 40 below when we went out the door. We were jumping jets. And you couldn't compute the wind chill factor. Jumping out of a jet going 125 miles an hour.
Yeah.
C-141 is what they were. And then 40 below outside. And you caught jumping black leather gloves. You can't jump in the Arctic mittens because you might have to get your reserve out. And I landed on the river there, frozen solid, of course. Stuck my hand in the Arctic mittens and warmed them up and hit my quick release and got out of it. I said, I'm going back to Texas. I'm getting too old for this ship.
So are you originally from Texas? Or?
No, when we got ready to retire in Alaska, that's where we wanted to go. We just liked Texas. And I figured I could do something at the university. Get a job doing something. So I went to work for the police department. 3 years I was chief of police. And until I got crossways with the new president. He's right. He's wrong and I was right, but I still, he's the president and I was the chief. I quit.
All right. Yeah. So where are you from originally? Growing
born
up?
In Oklahoma.
Born in Oklahoma?
And lived most of my life, finished high school in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Okay.
In fact, we moved there when I started high school, 7th, 8th grade.
What year did you go into to service?
It was 49.
1949?
Yeah, I was in Japan when everything hit the fan in Korea. We were around Mid-Atlantic and Incheon.
Okay.
And
how long were you in Korea for?
Well, I got hit in Korea after about 7 months, I guess. And I went back in 52 and 53. I got away clean that time. I didn't get hit. I kind of got lucky. I got hit the first time I was in a Ranger or a grenade. Not bad. Nothing bad about it. I'm still getting barber there at Fort Campbell. I had a lot of them in the back of my head. You know, we got the white side of all haircuts.
Yeah.
And he'd clink. A grenade fragment. He'd, what the hell is this? The barber got a grenade fragment out of it. I just had them been cut out for years now.
Did you ever get wounded in Vietnam?
Yeah.
Twice.
It was the Rangers when I got hit with a grenade.
Okay.
And then I got hit, screwed my legs up again in 68.
So after Korea, what did you do in the service before going to Vietnam, or how did, what did you do to work yourself into an advisor position to go over there?
I don't know, they just picked me.
Just picked you?
Yeah, I'd been to mountain climbing instructor school and I took my share of patrols out in Korea. I had a couple of years of combat over there. Yeah, they just picked me.
Just picked you. What kind of training would you do with the Rangers there in 63, the Arvin Rangers? So
Well, a lot of our patrols, I go out with platoons. We hit villages around there. We was only 5 Ks from what they call the Hobo Woods.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and there's tunnels all over the place. But we'd go out and hit villages in the morning, put a machine gun or a squad. We only had 2 machine guns in the range of the battalion. A4 machine guns, you probably don't know anything about. I scrambled parts and made A6s out of them. But we'd go in early in the morning, sweep through the village, and anybody around the back was dead. Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of guys come in and see their wives overnight and stuff like that. They died happy, I guess.
I guess so.
A lot of ambushes and stuff, primarily.
So how many other U.S. servicemen were there with you in 63, or were you just you out with the...
Me and the captain, and then I got that Special Forces vetting.
Right. So just 3 of you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Medic wasn't authorized. So if I went back to Saigon, I went back to Scranton's medical supplies. I ran across him in the bar, sitting there drinking vodka. And he said, yeah, I'll show you where to get it. It's a Special Forces warehouse out near Tonsonute in the motor pool.
Uh-huh.
And they was resupplying all the units out in the field. He knew the two guys he was running, only two people back there. Give me a case of this, a case of that, a case of this. We did a lot, spent a lot of medical supplies, not for us, but for specific action stuff in villages.
Right.
Shot a penicillin works like that. Good to me.
Yeah.
And had any medication we used. We did a lot of good stuff too, trying to win the hearts and minds of people like a Vietcong had already done.
Exactly.
And it worked out good.
So was it hard to get supplied at that time, or
the Vietnamese? The Vietnamese was afraid the Americans were going to leave too. We couldn't get anything through Vietnamese channel. We didn't have jungle boots for our troops. They had regular boots like you wear in the States. Their clothes was ragged. We had to beg for everything we got. But the cat went back and came back and we got everybody boots and fatigue. He scrounged that and I scrounged medical supplies and demolition. I scrounged a lot of demolition too. Booby trap devices and things like that.
Were they armed well or?
Basic weapon in the Rangers was a carbine, M1 carbine. We had a lot of automatic rifles, not that many. Only had two machine guns in the battalion. The American Rifle Company has two machine guns in every rifle platoon.
Right.
And we had the older type machine guns, A4s. And had a few M79s, which worked out good. But a lot of Thompson submachine guns.
Mm-hmm.
And their wives used to make vests for them. Thompson man was the heaviest loaded man we had because the 45 ammo was so heavy.
Right.
And his wives made vests for them to put their stuff in. But no, Vietnamese was hoarding everything. They just paid we was going to pull out. And he couldn't do anything through the Vietnamese channel. We never got a medevac chopper through Vietnamese. If we took casualties, the rules were you had to call through Vietnamese channels to get a helicopter, which they automatically turned down. Then you had to call through American channels to get them, so it took you 4 or 5 hours to get a chopper in there for a medevac. And of course, we heat casualties too.
Right.
Vietnamese didn't eat salt. I ate 16, 18 salt tablets a day, really.
Uh-huh.
And because they had a lot of them passing out from heat and stuff. Our basic diet was rice. I mean, that was it.
Uh-huh.
We'd stop at night and they'd cook rice and we'd eat. And then they'd cook some for in the morning. And for lunch the next day, and that was another rice ball wrapped in a banana leaf. That was your lunch. We ate rice, and they didn't do anything with rice like Chinese do or Japanese. They didn't cook rice, and that was your lunch, rice ball wrapped in a banana leaf.
How did you find the morale of the Vietnamese
troops?
They
were good. The troops were good. Yeah, good troops. They had been Ranger companies over there, but they was province chiefs, bodyguards, and district chiefs, and all that. And what we did was form a headquarters and pull four Ranger companies in, order them to turn up, and put them through Ranger school.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were really Rangers. Before they were just kind of guards, the province chiefs and stuff.
Right.
They're good soldiers, though. Mean. They mean. They cut the head off all their kills. Put them on a bamboo pole or something, stick a cigarette in their mouth or something crap like that. But I broke with that because I scrambled all these booby trap devices.
Right.
And they always came back and got their dead. And then the first time we did it, I said, don't cut their heads off, we're going to booby trap them. Two grenades under and a lift device. We pulled back about 300 yards and boom, boom, went back and had two more.
Hmm.
Said, yeah, this is better. So I started booby trapping.
Is there any, like a most memorable experience you remember from Vietnam that you might want to share with people, or just maybe your view on the war overall?
Well, my view on the war when I first went there, we operated about 40 Ks in a town called Bin Cat, outside of Bin Cat.
Right.
4 or 5 Ks off the main road, and never seen a government soldier. They just was not fighting. There was a regiment stationed in Bin Cat, they didn't do anything. And we did so much good. We knocked over 4 or 5 installations a week, 3 or 4 at least. Foot spike factories, hospitals, training centers. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the training center one time. Didn't have any guards out at all. There was posts along there where they had guards, But there wasn't any Vietnamese army operating there except us.
Mm-hmm.
And we caught him sitting in the classroom, had a graphic training aid up there, and he was giving a class on some kind of weapon. And I could throw a grenade farther than the Vietnamese, so we sneaked up by him. I threw the grenade and hit in the middle of him, and everybody opened up on him. And we killed, they shot the head out of the instructor. I mean, he poor bastard shot all the head. I think he was Chinese, too. Didn't look like a Vietnamese, big, fat, tusky guy.
Huh.
He may not have been Chinese, but he damn sure wasn't a Viet Cong out working there.
No, they're pretty skinny up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But they shot the pee out of him. In fact, a few of them got away because everybody concentrated on him. Huh? They had blood trail to go about. That's the kind of stuff we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you find the enemy, the NVA, the VC?
We never hit the NVA in 63.
Uh-huh.
It's just a Viet Cong.
What about later on? Did you see the morale of their, I guess you really wouldn't know their morale, but their fighting strength getting stronger, maybe? Or
oh, yeah.
Engagement.
But I believed in the war in 63. I believed we could do some good. I believed in when we went back in 65. What we were supposed to do is relieve the Vietnamese. They're going back and train more, get re-equipped and everything, and then they're going to come back up and take over the war. Hmm. I still believe it's winnable. We went back in 68, 67. We weren't trying to win the war, you know?
Uh-huh.
If they wanted to put together a combat jump on Hanoi, I'd been the first man out the door. But that wasn't what we wanted to do. I don't know what we were doing. Yeah. I kind of agreed with Colonel Hackworth. Are you familiar with him?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just went to a book signing at Austin Peay for him. I was the only, me and another guy was the only two people there from the 101st. There was no active duty officers there. He had a speech and reception and all that.
Mm-hmm.
No active duty officers from Fort Campbell at all. They're afraid of him, I think. They don't want to be associated with him because he... But he was right. He was right about the war. And we wasn't trying to win it. He calls the officers we got today, you know, the perfume princes. And, they're not combat leaders. He was a combat leader. I don't agree with a lot of stuff he did. Of course, you know he's the most decorated soldier in Vietnam.
Yes.
2 distinguished service crosses, 10 silver stars, 8 purple hearts, blah, blah, blah. But I guess he passed out decorations to people I don't think earned them. My standards for decorations are a lot higher than his is, to put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my troops, I can get, I don't know, they did shit and I should have run them up for decorations, but my standards are different.
Right. Did you personally, what kind of decorations did you receive?
Well, I got a Legion of Merit when I retired. And I told the tag commander, I said, I got you a Legion of Merit approved. I said, I don't want no damn Legion of Merit. That's an officer decoration, but they gave it to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I got the Bronze Star for Valor to Oak Leaf Cluster, Air Medal for Valor to Oak Leaf Cluster, 3 Purple Hearts, and shit like that.
What was your total length in service?
26 years.
26 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's long military career.
Mm-hmm.
And what year did you get out?
75.
75.
Mm-hmm. I called DA and wanted to know if I could come back in. How old are you? 70? No, we'll get back to you. I'm 71 now.
So, did you retire before or after the fall of Saigon?
I retired after.
After.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned some civic action earlier. Were you involved in much of that? Or
as much as we could, yes.
As much as you could?
There's always people with scabies and anything, all kind of crap in the village.
Uh-huh.
That medic we had was a great medic. And some of them had wounds from shrapnel and stuff like that.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, we did that every time we got a chance. That wasn't our job, but we wanted to do it anyway.
Right. And they seemed, I guess, very appreciative of it.
Yeah. One of my medics, this is rising with a sea company. It was a place called Go Boy, and I just got one of my sergeants across the river from us. One of my sergeants was killed, the other was shot in the jaw, and we was in water for days, a week or so. And we went over and occupied Go Boy. My medic, who later got killed, chasing a chicken, stepped on a mine out in the jungle. He delivered 2 babies that night in Go Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And another Viet Cong baby. They wasn't Viet Cong, they didn't have any choice, you know, the villages. The Viet Cong was taken care of, but we wasn't. That's what it amounted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add? I know that you were wanting to get back over.
Yeah, I need to get back out there. Get hugged and shake hands again.
But I guess you were the first to go over, I guess, on the ship with the sea company, you said?
Yeah. When I went over in 63, me and a guy named Eugene Hudson were the first two people to leave the 101st going over there. We had volunteered for it in 62. They put out a request for possible combat area, you know. That's all they put in, say where it was anyway. So me and Gene Hudson and several others volunteered, but we got picked to go. We were the first two people to leave the 101st to go over there. Gene Hudson should have got a Medal of Honor. And with the Rangers, he got a first Silver Star that wasn't awarded posthumously. There was four awarded in history, the first one that wasn't posthumous. Mm-hmm. But he should have got the Medal of Honor. But they're saving that for a Special Forces Lieutenant.
Well, I guess that'll do it for right now, and I sure do appreciate it.
Okay, appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, good luck. Uh-huh. Who's on next?